You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The FWA podcast from William Hill. Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Hello all, a warm welcome along to the latest edition of the Football Writers Association podcast here with William Hill. Dave Kellner in the studio, joined as ever by one of the top journalists in the country to discuss the weekend's televised football. It is Ian Ladyman, the football editor of the Daily Mail, who joins me right now. First of all, a warm welcome. Good afternoon to you, Ian.
Hello, mate. Hope all well.
I'm very well, thank you. Looking forward to the weekend. Just before we get stuck into this week's action, I've been looking at your Twitter page, Ian, and there's lots of comment about diving on there, or a couple of tweets about diving. Mm. And it's been to the fore again in the last 7 or 8 days with Lucas and Rashford and Leroy Sané all being accused of diving in their respective matches. Do you think the problem is becoming greater than it has been in the past, or not?
No, I don't think it's greater than it has been in the past. Players have always done it. Thankfully, now we've got away from this ridiculous old cliche of it only being foreign players, because if that was ever true, it's certainly not true now. Our players do it as well. But I don't think the problem generally is much worse. It's always been there. If you dip into the archives on places like YouTube, you'll find great images of favourites like Franny Lee throwing themselves around from the 70s. So it's always happened. Doesn't make it right. Just so happens that last weekend, obviously, we had three incidents to debate.
Yeah, we did indeed. What do you make to the argument that if someone's touched in the box, they're entitled to go down? Do you think that stands up or not?
Well, what I would say is that it's possible, and I think the Harry Kane incident is an example of this, it's possible to be fouled in the box and also to dive, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
You can be fouled. Harry Kane was fouled and therefore was deserving of a penalty. He also dived to make it look worse. So I know this sounds ridiculous, but it could be feasible for a player to receive a penalty and also receive a yellow card for diving. Harry Kane was fouled and he dived. The other two players that you mentioned both dived, weren't fouled. Mm. I think that it's difficult for players because occasionally when they are fouled and elect to stay upright, even though it might disrupt their progress or it might knock them off balance and cause them to shoot wide or high when otherwise they may not have, And they may stay on the feet and they don't get anything, because referees and linesmen only seem to signal when players go over. So that might be one way of looking at it. If referees started to maybe give free kicks or penalties for when players are fouled and disrupted, but endeavour to stay on the feet, you can be fouled and stay upright.
Yes.
So I think there's an area there that needs to be looked at. In answer specifically to your question, Do I understand why players go down when they are touched? Yes, I do, because this is a competitive game and players are trying to seek advantage. I don't think we can change that, but we can change the way that certain things are interpreted, I think.
Let's talk about this weekend's football, because we've got a big weekend. 6 live games televised this weekend, and we start tonight with West Ham versus Tottenham at the London Stadium, and the Hammers are 7-1 to win this game. The draw is in the betting at 4-1 with Tottenham 2-5. Rarely has there been this big a gap between the two sides going into a Premier League encounter. Spurs are flying at the moment, 9 straight wins in the league, and West Ham, that their season has not been disastrous, but it's finishing with a bit of a whimper, Ian.
Yeah, 7-1 is an incredible price for a home team, isn't it?
Yeah.
Look, I did a piece in the paper in the Daily Mail this morning about this. At the end of last season, there were 8 points between Tottenham and West Ham. If Tottenham were to win tonight, there'll be 41 points between them this season. That's remarkable, given that the general expectation was that this would be a season where West Ham could kick on. New stadium, good manager, good players, spend a bit of money during last summer. People thought West Ham would kick on. Some people thought Tottenham might struggle on the back of the disappointment that they had last season, especially given that they had Champions League football to play this time round. Hasn't happened. Tottenham have gone from strength to strength. West Ham have really, really struggled. You're right, it's not been a disaster. I was just at Slaven Bilic's press conference yesterday when Bilic said that it had been a decent season. Not sure that many West Ham fans would call it decent. I think most of them would call it very, very disappointing.
Yeah, as far as this game is concerned, you mentioned West Ham being a big price at 7-1, but can you oppose Spurs going to West Ham given their recent record and given how Mauricio Pochettino has worked with the team this season? They look terrific going forward. They're very sturdy at the back, and surely if he can keep this group of players together over the summer, they will challenge once again for the title next season.
I think they will. You know, they're right to be favourites tonight. They're on a great run of form, 9 straight wins. West Ham have won 1 in 9, I think. Pochettino's a terrific manager. He's got a group of players that play the way he wants them to play. They play in his image. I'm told he wants to buy 3 players this summer. One of those will certainly be a centre forward. Looks like Kyle Walker will go. Yeah. Interesting that someone told me yesterday that they're not looking to sell Walker, but they do need to sell a player if Pochettino was going to be able to buy 3 players. Tottenham are still in that situation whereby they're not exactly awash with money. That's one of the reasons why they're building a new stadium. So it'll be an interesting summer at Tottenham. They won't go and buy 4, 5, 6 players like a club like Manchester City might do, but they will buy 2 or 3. And if those signings are good ones, then they've got a real chance to have another real go at the title next time.
What's your prediction for the match this evening?
I think West Ham might push them closer than people think, but I think there's such a will about Spurs at the moment. They know they can close the gap to 1 point on Chelsea if they win tonight. I think they'll edge it maybe 2-1 or something like that.
Tottenham to win the game 2-1 is available at 15-2. You mentioned Manchester City. Let's talk about them. They're at home against Palace this weekend. This is 12:30 on Saturday. And Manchester City 1-4 to win the game. The draw 5-1 with Crystal Palace in the betting at 10-1. We have got hashtag your odds on the William Hill website for this game and enhanced odds as well. Manchester City's season hasn't been what many people anticipated when Pep Guardiola took over. I think it's taken him longer than he maybe envisaged to get this City team playing how he wants them to play, and maybe they're not there yet even now. And you said that you think there's going to be wholesale changes, maybe 4, 5, 6 players coming in the summer.
Yeah, I think you only need to look at the City squad as a fan or a journalist to realise they need to buy some players. They've got some terrific players there, don't get me wrong. You know, some real terrific young players who should serve that club well for years to come. But around the edges, they're not quite as strong as they might wish to be. They need full-backs both sides, for example. They need a centre-half. They need a goalkeeper. So there's 4 players already. and we haven't even got into midfield in the attack yet. So they will buy players. They need players. They still rely too much on a familiar spine and David Silva, Aguero, even Torre in the second half of this season. That can't go on forever. It needs to be freshened. I've just noticed just before we started this that I think Guardiola has said today that Aguero and Silva are not going to make it. Not going to make it for tomorrow's game, which I think really brings Palace into this game, because Palace needs something. They can play away well at big teams, as we've seen. They won at Liverpool, they won at Chelsea. I think Palace will go into this game thinking that they might be able to get something, and I think they would be right to have a little quiet confidence about them.
Do you think Aguero will be there after the summer? Do you think he'll still be at City? What's your gut feeling on that?
My gut feeling is that he probably won't. My opinion as a football journalist and as a football supporter is that he should be. You know, I really sometimes think that we complicate things too much in the modern game. Aguero to me is a goal scoring centre forward. Wouldn't everybody in the Premier League want a goal scoring centre forward in their team, no matter what system or what formation or style they like to play? Aguero scores goals, and he scores important goals. He scores the first goal in a game, or he scores an equalising goal in a game. Not the type of player who'll come in and score you a couple of goals when you're already 2-0 up. He scores important goals. So I would retain him. I'm not sure he's Guardiola's type, and I think he knows it, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's on his way.
Do you think Guardiola's been too stubborn in his opening season at City?
Yeah, I do. Without going back right to the start and talking about the goalkeeper, that is the most startling example of all. The decision he made with to jettison Joe Hart and the decision that he subsequently made to bring Claudio Bravo back into the team. Bravo has shown absolutely nothing subsequently to suggest that was the right decision. There is a stubbornness about Guardiola. There's a stubbornness about a lot of top managers. It's part of the profile, but I do wonder sometimes if Guardiola does lack that ability to sometimes just realise that he's made a mistake and reverse it.
Interesting stat from Opta ahead of this one as well. In the last 10 Premier League games, Crystal Palace have won more Premier League points than Manchester City. They've got 19. City have only got 17 in the last 10 games. What is your prediction for this game then, Ian?
I was at Palace on Wednesday. I was doing an interview down there with Christian Benteke. I bumped into Sam Allardyce while I was there. And Sam Allardyce had the look of a guy who knows that his team aren't safe yet and knows that they want to get something from this game. I have a sneaking suspicion they might get a draw out of it.
5-1, the draw. Did Sam Allardyce say anything enlightening in that interview?
Sorry, the interview was with Christian.
Oh, Christian Benteke, and you bumped into Sam Allardyce. Do apologise.
I'm not going to say that the interview was dull, am I? Given it's in tomorrow's paper, so what I'm going to say is it's the best interview you'll read this season. That's what I'm going to say. Must buy it. Must read it.
He's been revitalised, hasn't he, as well, Benteke? I think the last 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, he's I've never been convinced about him. In that he can be so powerful and look like such a world beater, and then he can go missing and look a shadow of himself. 16 goals he's got for Palace this season in his first season. That's not bad. That's not bad in a team that's struggled generally. So I think he'll be satisfied with that rather than absolutely elated. And I think if Palace can maybe buy a couple of players that can play to Benteke's strengths next season, Allardyce can get that team going the way that Allardyce can get teams going, then, yeah, we might see even more out of Benteke next time round.
Let's talk about Swansea versus Everton. This is 5:30 on Saturday. Swansea 7-4 to win the game. The draw 12-5 with Everton in the betting at 13-8. Enhanced odds here as well. Llorente to score and Swansea to win was 17-5. Now 4-1 with William Hill, and Lukaku to score and Everton to win was 13-5, now 3-1. This season has threatened to be brilliant for Everton at times, and at times they've looked pretty poor, and one of those poor performances came last week at Goodison against Chelsea in a game where I thought, given their home form going into that match, Ian, they were going to give Chelsea a real fight at home, but they didn't. They rolled over quite easily, getting beaten 3-0 in the end. And maybe it was an indicator to Ronald Koeman that they aren't that close to challenging for a top four spot just yet.
I don't think they were quite as bad as you make out. I thought they were in the game for an hour, and then folded a little bit once Pedro scored that wonderful goal. Everton have had a great season, a good season. The problem they've had is that they had a dip in the middle. They started well, and then before Christmas they tailed off, had a bad run. But credit to them, they've come back. It's so difficult. It would be easy for me to sit here and say, yeah, they can get in the top four next season if they buy well in the summer, but it's going to be so difficult to get into that top four next season. It's going to be even harder than it has been this time round. Manchester United will be better next time round. I wouldn't think Arsenal are going to be as poor again. Teams like Chelsea, Manchester City are going to get stronger. Liverpool, you'd imagine, would get stronger. So, for a team like Everton to think that they can get it, make that big jump from 6th to 4th, which is probably, as big a jump these days in modern terms as it probably is from, say, 16th to 10th or something. It's a big gap now to get from the fringes of the top four into the top four. So for Everton to do that, they're going to have a spectacular summer and a spectacular season. I think they've got an increasingly good squad. They've got a manager, I think, who knows he has quite a good way to play. But I must admit, I don't see them in the top four next year. And I don't see them winning this game either, simply because I think Swansea have probably have a greater need than Everton at this stage of the season.
Definitely do. Swansea 7-4. They've been kept afloat by the goals of Llorente and the wizardry of Gylfi Sigurdsson, who is a tremendous player.
Yeah, I mean, Swansea to me have looked for a long time like a team that just aren't quite physically right for the Premier League. It sounds a very basic thing to say, but I just don't think they have. I just don't have enough physicality about them. I don't think they have enough strength, but they do have a couple of good players there, like you mentioned. Sigurdsson would get into a lot of teams in the Premier League, and Llorente's a good goal scorer when he's on his game. I just don't think that there's been enough around them. I don't think they've been strong enough across the back or in the centre of midfield. Paul Clement's done a good job since he's come in. Whether it's going to be good enough, I'm still not sure.
Let's talk Liverpool versus Southampton then. Swansea to win that game against Everton. The two live games on Sunday, Liverpool versus Southampton and Arsenal versus Manchester United, which we will come on to shortly. Liverpool are 8-13 to beat Southampton, who are 5-1 with the draw in the betting at 3-1. So Liverpool odds on to win this game. And that 1-0 win at Vicarage Road last week was huge for Liverpool because it kept them safely inside that top four, and it was some strike from Emre Can as well. And I think Jurgen Klopp will feel like his first full season at Liverpool will have been a success if they do have Champions League football next season.
Yeah, that was the stated aim at the start of the season. One of the problems that Klopp had was the perception, the change of perception brought about by the way his team started the season. They started so well that people started to think they could challenge for the Premier League title. And that was a great feeling for Liverpool to have for a while. Although looking at it now, maybe a little bit unrealistic. Top four would be a good finish for them. That was his idea at the start. That was his idea at the start of the season. And if he does that, I think the only real disappointment that he'll have when he looks back is the fact that his team lost a League Cup semi-final to Southampton. Mm. That was a trophy that Liverpool really thought they could win. And I was at Anfield the night that Southampton went there and turned them over. So Southampton know that they've no reason to be fearful of Anfield. They're a decent side. They've got some decent players. But this game's all about Liverpool. Liverpool play, then they'll win. But you never quite know what you're going to get out of Liverpool, do you? Especially at home, which is why that price you just mentioned there for the draw sounds reasonably attractive. Liverpool, as we saw recently against Crystal Palace, and have seen also this season, I think it was Wolves in the FA Cup, and lost at home to Swansea in the Premier League as well. They are capable of throwing in a poor performance at home, especially when they need a good one. This is a game I'd fancy Liverpool to win, but you're never quite sure with them, are you?
No, you're not. It's been an inconsistent season, I think, especially since Christmas for Liverpool. 8-13 to win the game. If you do fancy the draw, it's 3-1. Just one quick word on Southampton before we move on, Ian. They're going to finish with their lowest points tally in the last four seasons in the Premier League. Is their policy in the transfer market catching up with them, selling their younger starlets for a decent fee and then trying to regenerate the squad all over again? Is that finally catching up with Southampton, in your opinion?
I'm not sure it is. I just think there might be a bit, I think there's a bit of an issue there with the manager. I think there's some uncertainty about whether he'll stay, how popular he is with his players, what they think of his training and things like that. I think that kind of uncertainty might be part of it. I think they've got good players in that team, and if you look at the fringe players, they've got good young players coming through as well. So I don't think it necessarily is the squad. I think it's a matter of getting the best from that squad. Anybody who was at the League Cup final when they lost to United will tell you that they shouldn't have lost. That they shouldn't have lost to United. They were the better team that day.
Liverpool versus Southampton. Going with the draw then at 3-1 in that game. Big game of the weekend. Arsenal versus Manchester United, which is 4 p.m. on Sunday, and Arsenal are 10-11 to win this match. The draw 13-5 with Manchester United in the betting at 16-5. Manchester United, having beaten Celta Vigo on Thursday night, make this trip to London for the game on Sunday afternoon. And Jose Mourinho has already intimated, I think he might have actually stated it outright, that he's going to make changes and rest some of his stars for this game, looking ahead to confirming their place in the final of the Europa League on Thursday. So we might see a much changed starting 11 for Manchester United here.
Yeah, we might. I think they are struggling a little bit physically now towards the end of the season. Thursday will have taken a lot out of them, and I think that they might catch up with them a little bit here. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a draw in this game.
Yeah, the draw, 12 draws they've had in the last 25, Manchester United, during this unbeaten spell. 13-5, the draw in the game. What's going on with Arsenal at the moment, Ian? Because Mesut Ozil was clearly frustrated, I think probably with his performance after that whipping they took at Spurs, really. I know it ended 2-0, but Spurs were completely dominant in that game, and he was frustrated about having to be tested afterwards as well by the Arsenal backroom staff. And he's come out the story's come out that he's wanting to be paid as Arsenal's highest paid player next season, £300,000 alongside Alexis Sanchez. Performances recently haven't warranted that sort of upgrade in weekly wage, shall we say, Ian?
No, they haven't. I think people like Ozil are a symptom of the malaise that's affected Arsenal. Again, they've got some good players, but they've got players who just sometimes don't do enough, and they've got other players who were good players, but not quite good enough, like Olivier Giroud. Ozil's one of the best players, great player to watch when he's on his game. But I was at the game last Sunday at White Hart Lane, and there were times when you wondered whether Ozil was playing. I think that he's got to decide and find a way to increase his own level performance before he thinks about increasing salary. Mm-hmm. Arsenal, it's been a difficult season for them. I'm not surprised to find them outside the top four. I think that you only have to look at the Arsenal squad to realise that it's not got the same depth of quality as a squad like Chelsea or even Tottenham these days. It has good players. Some of them aren't good enough. And I think it's been. I think there's a drift at that football club. There's a drift. I think that the uncertainty over Arsene Wenger hasn't helped. The uncertainty over Ozil that you mentioned hasn't helped, and also Alexis Sanchez. And I think this is a season that really now depends on an FA Cup final for them. If they can win the FA Cup again, then they might have something to look back on with some kind of pride. But in terms of their Premier League performances, they haven't been good enough at all, which is why I think we might see a slightly flatter game at the Emirates on Sunday than we would otherwise expect between these two.
Okay, are they drawing the market there? 13-5, Ian's pick. And we finish the weekend with Chelsea versus Middlesbrough. 1-7 Chelsea to win this game. The draw 15-2, Middlesbrough 18-1. Chelsea have responded in the last couple of weeks. In those games where you thought, if they're going to slip up, Southampton at home and Everton away would be the two games, because they do have a very easy run in, Ian.
Yeah, absolutely. They've done so well, Chelsea. If you consider that Tottenham have won 9 on the spin and they still haven't caught them, that just shows how well Chelsea have done. They had their blip, didn't they, if you can call it a blip, with that home defeat to Palace, and then a couple of weeks later they lost at Manchester United. But they've recovered from that. They've shown great fortitude. I think the way that Antonio Conte celebrated with his players at Goodison Park last weekend after that win probably showed you that he thought that was the one. He thought that was the one where they could have had a problem. And I certainly don't think this Monday night game is one where they will have a problem. Incredible to hear 18-1 odds for Middlesbrough, but that probably just indicates how strong Chelsea are and the kind of momentum that they have going forward.
Chelsea to win by how many, Ian?
I don't think it'll be a massacre, but yeah, Chelsea to win 3-0.
3-0 to Chelsea in the betting at 11-2. Ian, thank you for your company on this podcast.
Anytime, Joe. Thanks very much.
Where are you this weekend? Are you attending a live game?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Liverpool on Sunday to see if they can get a little bit closer to securing that top four place.
Enjoy the action at Anfield then. Remember, you can follow both myself and Ian on Twitter, at D Kellner, and at Ian_Ladyman_DM is Ian's Twitter handle. And thanks again to Ian for his company, and make sure you check out all the betting on the William Hill website ahead of this weekend's Premier League action. And we'll be back on the FWA podcast next weekend.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.